Is it a modern reworking of an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical or a dystopian nightmare world? We watched Cats from 2019 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello and welcome back to Redeeming Features. Yes, we know it's been a while. We do apologize, but you know what? We're back and we're back and we're big and we're hitting one of the biggest movies of 2019. Introduce myself first. I am Trevor. I am joined by my good friend
Christian Fletcher.
Yeah.
Thank you, Trevor. And I have read reviews that said that Cats could have been responsible for COVID. So I'm just leaving that to lead in with tonight. Really bad timing. So
that's right. We are checking out the movie Cats from 2019. Now, I did suggest this one. I think I suggested it because I knew Christian would come up with it eventually, so I wanted to have some semblance of control over the actual watching of this particular movie.
Yeah. Very surprised that you came up with it, Trevor, but also stoked at the same time.
Oh, there we go. That's handy. Now, there will be spoilers. There will be spoilers in there. So if you desperately don't want Cats to be spoiled, then please watch it before listening to this podcast. So there we go. You've had your warning. Rest is on you. So I do have a synopsis of the movie, though, if this helps. A tribe of cats called the Jellicles must decide yearly which one will ascend to the Heaviside Layer and come back to a new Jellicle life.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Do those words even make sense?
I'll give you my my history with this. My mum is a huge Cats fan and has been. She went and saw it in Sydney when it first came out in 1984 or something like that. So we've even got the mug. We've got everything. So I've always had Cats around me a lot as a musical, I suppose. And in 1998, they released a filmed version of the stage show, which I had on VHS and I think probably wore out. It was just very much a big thing at that time. So I've always had Cats around me. So that's probably giving you a bit more of an angle about where I'm coming from, because you've got to think a lot of people that this was unleashed literally were people that knew nothing about the musical. And I think that's it gives you a bit of an idea if you know the musical. I've seen it on stage also a couple of times. It gives you a bit of a different angle going through. So for people that don't know the musical, I'd love to know how you thought, Trevor.
I had some knowledge of the musical. I'd never watched the thing from start to end, but I was, you know, still pretty much aware of what it was and what was in there. And then I watched this. Anyway, let's move on quickly before I say too much to our turkey trivia.
Gobble, 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 yeah.
Now, this is where we talk turkey about the movie, facts and figures, and also get into a bit of trivia about it. So it's all in the name. Now, on IMDb, this is rated a whopping 2.7 out of 10. It had a budget of $95 million, and it ended up taking about $75 million worldwide.
Yeah, and as we know, Trevor, it's always double with promotion too. Mm. So that's a lot of money to be thrown. And especially when we're going into, I saw it at the cinemas when it first came out, like 2 days after it started. And it was about the week before Christmas. So we always know that sort of window of time is always when, I suppose, blockbusters happen. So they were going for that result, I believe.
I think they were. Well, to get a bit of an idea about the reaction, I've got a few of the awards listed here. Now, it was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Original Song for the song Beautiful Ghosts. I'll just check for any other ones.
I think that was motion it.
The Motion Picture Sound Editors nominated it for Outstanding Achievement in Sound Editing Musical for Feature Film. Yep, okay, that's about it for the positive ones.
It I wasn't sure won if Jennifer Hudson might have got a shout out on the Golden Globes, but it was a bit of a small role to be.
It was. Well, I mean, this could be positive. The Gallica, the Society of LGBTQ Entertainment Critics, gave it Campy Film of the Year. It won the Golden Schmo for Worst Movie of the Year. It won the Hawaii Films Critics Society's Worst Film of the Year. It was nominated on the Razzies for Worst Screen Combo between Jason Derulo and his CGI neutered bulge. Worst Actress for Francesca Hayward and Worst Supporting Actress for Judi Dench. It won Worst Picture, Worst Supporting Actor for James Corden, Worst Screenplay, Worst Director, Worst Supporting Actress for Rebel Wilson, Worst Screen Combo, any two half feline, half human hairballs. So it did a bit of a sweep at the Razzies, and the Yoga Award gave it a special award for Worst Digital Makeup.
And as we know, and for those who haven't seen it, Cats is pretty much 105% digital. And look, I didn't go to early previews. I was given tickets, but didn't. I sent reviewers at the time. But apparently the first few days of screenings, the film wasn't finished. You were seeing feet and all sorts of CGI that wasn't working. However, when I saw it in cinemas, and I saw it in cinemas probably twice, I think the second time was more to go, let's just see if that actually happened. But I didn't notice any problems with that sort of stuff. So I think it was edited a lot, but they were pretty much, I think Tom Hooper pretty much said like 18 hours before the movie was even due to be in cinemas, he was still editing it. So there was a lot of work involved with this. So, and probably something that was probably taken on for a product that probably shouldn't have had this much time and money put into it. But look, just in my research, and this kind of fits in with the trivia, but Cats is actually the fourth longest running Broadway musical. It ran from 1982 to 2000, so that's 18 years it played on stage. And it was one of those, it came out at the time of the blockbuster musical. We're probably used to blockbuster musicals now with Les Mis and Phantom of the Opera. But Cats was probably the first one to sort of do this. You know, the whole theatre was turned into a junkyard. So it was an event to go and see this into the theatre, even if the material might not have been necessarily up to standard. Now, this is something you've got to think when this is going to be adapted into a movie. Now, so I believe that once a film finally leaves Broadway, they can adapt it. So why the 13, or was it, why the 19-year gap? But maybe it should have been a longer gap, but we'll just leave it at that.
Who knows? Well, you definitely covered over a bit of my trivia I've got here, because 2 days after this movie's release, Universal Pictures announced that they would be releasing a new version with updated CGI at an undisclosed time. So which makes this probably the first cinematic release movie to get an upgrade patch, which is just amazing. Oh. As a gamer, I'm used to upgrade patches, but to see one for a movie, that's a doozy.
And it goes to show the era we're living in now where everything is digital, where we're not getting... Imagine if it had been on 35mm prints that had been sent out. We just have to deal with whatever's on there.
So we would.
Luxury now being digital cinemas, but I don't think it's recommended that people do continue editing their movie after it's been released. I'd probably push back the premiere date, but he had it in cinemas, so.
Yep. And with this film, should have looked that up what it was, but Tom Hooper became the third person to ever direct both a Best Picture Oscar winner and a Worst Picture Razzie winner. So, there you go.
I think he did the King's Speech with Colin Firth.
He did. Yeah, that's the one.
Where it all started to go, where it all started to not go downhill, but he has been known as the musical killer, because you may remember in 2012, 2013, they did a movie musical of Les Miserables, which was Tom Hooper. So sort of going from that pedigree, and a lot of people had issues with that. I haven't made it all the way through that movie yet, and I'm a big Les Mis fan. So going in with that, Cats, let's try Cats. So I think the result and probably the response, I couldn't think of another director to do it. I think even Andrew Lloyd Webber has ended up wiping his hands of it too.
I think so. I think not a lot of people are still talking about this, funnily enough. Yes. Now, my final little bit was that trailers for this movie received far more dislikes than likes on YouTube, primarily due to the cat's awkward part human, part CGI appearances. One reviewer on entertainment site Nerdist News said they felt the teaser trailer was more terrifying than the trailer for It Chapter 2, which was released at the same time.
It's interesting. I have seen many versions of the trailer cut as a horror movie on YouTube. So now, again, going in as someone who knows the stage show, but of course that sort of makeup works in theatre. But going in from being a fan of the stage show, I didn't find the trailer weird. I remember even my parents saw the trailer at the cinema and said, "Oh my God, we can't wait to see that." So I never quite got the, "Oh my God, that's weird," probably because I knew the stage show. But again, I was scratching my head at why they'd bother to turn this into a movie in the first place. But that's kind of getting to my conclusion. But
fair enough.
So, but I know they got so much bad response. And I think even Tom Hooper and a lot of the visual effects people went away and said, "God, we've got to change the way the cats look." But based on that trailer versus the end result of the movie, I don't think they changed too much.
No, I think they just, I think they dialed some stuff back, honestly. I think the, or just totally like tried to make it look a bit more blended, because I do remember that first trailer and just how weird they looked. And I am aware, I've seen the actual costumes and stuff like that of the live show a number of times. So yeah, it was weird. But we're not here to talk about the trailer. We're here to see if we can redeem the box office bomb and critical failure of Cats from 2019. So we do need to set our baseline. I try to be, you know, quite selective and really try to find something, I guess, that covered everything without being too jokey or whatever. So the title of this one is Worse Than Expected. How bad can a film with such a great cast be? The answer, very bad. No matter what you've heard or read about this film, the reality is even worse. One star.
Yeah, at least they didn't put the whole, you know, pull my eyes out now. Or what is it, the most offensive thing to ever happen since Dogs?
That's what
Trevor, I'm glad you picked something that was a bit more serious. So we can only go up sideways or beneath from there.
I tell you, the first thing I noticed, which took me by surprise at the very, very start, was the fact that this was a movie done by Working Title Pictures. I'm a fan of a lot of their work. If you're familiar with the Cornetto trilogy, like Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and World's End, they're all Working Title Pictures. There's a lot of good stuff under Working Title, and I just went, why are you associated with this? I don't know if it gave me a little bit of hope or not, but I was kind of like thinking I was not expecting to see that. But mind you, 2 minutes and I already found it a bit creepy.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't waste time.
Now, Trevor, you said that you were very loosely knew the movie. I mean, sorry, knew the stage show. Were you familiar with any of the music? Because I think, like with any musical, especially when something's completely sung, in the case of this, except for, look, in the stage show, it's completely sung. They've added dialogue, we'll get to that. But I think in the case where something's completely sung and you don't know what's happening, I think a lot of times it needs subtitles so people actually know what's happening. But I do wonder, going in, you would have literally been thrown in the deep end.
Much like the cat, Victoria.
Yeah, I had cat? Sandra, but that's the other cat. Now with the stage show,
she was literally throwing in.
Literally. So we see her abandoned at the start. Now, Victoria in the stage show is more kind of, I suppose, the prima ballerina of the cast, you know, because Cats is a very much a dance musical ballerina type show, like that's, you know, which we don't see a lot of in this, which is unfortunate. You know, it's very much a dance musical, but the role of Victoria is sort of one of the smaller, younger cats. So she's seen as sort of reaching out to Grisabella later on in the show as well. But so for this, they thought they needed to give the movie a bit more of a protagonist. So we're shown her being abandoned. That's completely written in. No dialogue even exists in the stage show. So anything like that that's sort of been added in, that made me a bit curious. But so we're sort of, I think it was sort of so that we can see everything from her point of view. But at the same time too, she must have been on an acid trip.
She was definitely the point of view character. There's no doubt about that, because there's so much going on, and just cuts back to her with the little look in her face.
Yeah, a look that she has quite a lot.
As opposed to my look, which was like
2 minutes in.
But I did notice, like, because the one thing I noticed with the CGI, I think it meant that, you know, pretty much all the actors really got the chance to dance, even if they weren't great dancers. I mean, I noticed a few times, I guess it was just the, we'll call it minimal, I suppose, of the fur and the ears and the tail and the stuff on top of the actors themselves. But then there's other bits where they're doing, I suppose, more flamboyant, more extravagant, wilder stuff, where you can tell the body is fully animated, but they've still got that face on there. That never works.
There's a scene, it might have been in that Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats, the opening song, or maybe a bit later when they have the Jellicle Ball. I know it probably all blends into one. You're probably like, But there's a trio called the Les Twins, or I think it's called that. The two cats you might have seen, Trevor, that had sneakers on. Again, one of those weird choices. Mm-hmm. Now there's parts where you see them dance and it just looks, the only way I can term it is jerky. And I think that's obviously a lot to do with the CGI and a lot of choices by Tom Hooper in that, like a lot of the reviews would say, why do these cats have sneakers? And I know Tom Hooper said that early in the state, they originally were going to give all the cats paws, you know, animate paws. But in the end, we just see their five fingers, which people go, whoa. But he said it was weirder when they had paws. So again, it's one of those things, these kind of decisions where you're like, should we just assume these are cat human hybrids, or we're watching Island of Dr. Moreau or something like that?
That would probably work
in that world. But so you see these decisions that he had to make, which again make me go, shouldn't those decisions be made? Maybe this movie didn't need to be made. Look the turning this musical into a movie has been sitting around for years. They were going to turn it into an animated movie in the mid-90s, and T.S. Eliot's estate said, no, we don't want it to be some Disney-fied thing. What would he be thinking of this?
Yes, indeed.
You were mentioning the movements, like some of it's quite good, and a lot of the I was going to say you know when it's a bit more subtle, but a lot of the cast are actually ballerinas. So anyone that wasn't what I term stunt casting, you know, Rebel Wilson, getting names, you know, over necessarily dancing or singing talent. All the other performers were like that Francesca Howard, who plays that plays Victoria. She's actually the lead dancer of the Royal Ballet. Robbie Fairchild, who played Munkustrap, sort of the narrator character. Oh, he's always been my favourite character, and to me is the star of the show. They're both lead ballerinas in London. So it's interesting when you kind of see that, there was this sort of graceful stuff that they could have, but then you've got these people that can't do that.
Yeah.
But can sing a song and have a name that we can put on a billboard. So,
yeah, definitely. Well, I was absolutely stunned, shocked, and surprised when Weber Wilson turned up to be a awkward, bumbling character who makes one-liner jokes and manages to have the song sequence that has characters that look even worse than the cats, being the mice and the cockroaches.
The cockroaches didn't worry me as much. The mice were just
terrifying.
The faces of children was just bizarre.
They're talking about eating them as well.
oh yeah, and then there's scenes where she's hitting the wall and the cockroach lands in her mouth, and I'm like, hang on, they were just performing for you. And again, in the stage show, the old Gumby cat is kind of the auntie of the group or the grandma of the group. That's kind of cool because she teaches everyone how to dance and knit and all this. But Rebel Wilson just turned it into a, like, I don't mind Rebel Wilson, but unfortunately she's very one note, and this kind of just reiterated that a lot more. I found her, and I think probably the next two sections when we had Rum Tum Tugger with Jason Derulo, which wasn't as bad, but then Buster for Jones with James Corden, that whole section was just icky and awkward and weird. And it almost like those songs normally in the stage show are kind of like, you know, your character songs, which I suppose essentially they all are, but something happy to sort of bring everyone in. But unfortunately, Rebel Wilson, you know, you just couldn't deliver it. And those one-liners, Trevor, like, she kept delivering them over the top of half of Rum Tum Tugger's song, which is one of the best songs in the whole movie or show. And you're just like going, ooh, you know, did the director just go, do whatever you want?
I think, yeah, it's just like, you know, let her do what she wants and they'll throw in the bits that they show her that they think are funnier, I guess.
Yeah.
Would be the case.
And so as a result, all these, not, I want to say iconic songs, but songs that you're so familiar with from the stage show, suddenly done by people that are very different. And like Jason Derulo doing Rum Tum Tugger. Now, that's such an iconic role. It's very Frankenfurter meets Mick Jagger, which is, I suppose, kind of the same thing. meets David Bowie. You know, that's the sort of the way the Rum Tum Tugger character. And then we've got Jason Derulo, who just kind of wants to, I don't know, you know that with that song. I'm surprised he didn't say his name in the lyrics, as he usually does.
Yeah.
So you're seeing these songs that are so identifiable with the stage show being sung sung by people, you know, and it's losing its entire, I suppose, melodic structure.
Yeah, I mean, the Rum Tum Tugger song, that was probably the first one that I felt was a bit too long, especially with the whole thing was basically just him being fawned over by the female cats. An entire gag, I suppose, visually to go with that song. And but it was just like, I was thinking, why is this song still going? It's just, it was a decent enough song, but I think for the movie and the way they presented it, it just wore thin very, very quick.
Mm-hmm. And especially when you've got them performing in, that's a lot of the reviews, they're performing in a milk bar that suddenly seems like the same size as all of the cats. You know, that's another thing.
Where
the dimensions, ratios, I don't know what the term I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Where you've got, I don't know, you've got James Corden walking through a dog door and it's like thousands times bigger than him. But then later on they're using a fork that's smaller than,
the size of the cats
with the CGI.
The size of the cats was ridiculous. It kept changing.
Especially when you'd see like four of them run through a cat door at one time, like, hang on, if that's what it's going to be. But I have actually seen the special features. I might have the Blu-ray somewhere. Anyway, I'm probably the only person that ever bought it. in the special features, and you see a lot, it sort of ruins the illusion, but the illusion probably was ruined for a lot of people anyway, but they're pretty much just wearing body suits with dots all over them with green screen totally behind them. So from a visual effects point of view, getting those ratios would be so damn hard, but again, planning.
Yeah. But it's just like, even in the same scene, Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer, for example, they spend time like in the bedroom where they're like half the size of this person's bed, but then they're putting a ring on Victoria, like a bracelet, and then they're downstairs and they fit inside the saucers, but then they're big enough to sit on the chairs and actually be above the table. That's in one song, and this is through the entire goddamn movie. They go from one thing where they're all seeing normal size, and then they're suddenly they're not much taller than a metal rail on a railway line.
Mm.
It's just I made my point. I can't, sorry. That's just one of the things that bugging me to this entire thing.
And I know this movie is very much like that, but Mungo Jerry and Rumpel teaser scene stands out as one that's probably a bit better than some of the others. But you mentioned, I know we're skipping ahead a bit, but the railway scene with Skimbleshanks is probably one of the most impressive parts of the movie, because probably not for the size differences, but just how they managed to make it work with the cats tap dancing down the railway line. Again, you're looking at going, these ratios are quite long. Well, different, I mean. Mm. Is ratio the word I'm looking for? Yeah. Sizing comparisons, yeah.
Yeah. The main thing I thought with that particular number was, how can they still be introducing new fucking cats?
Oh, I know. And that's the thing that I know you mentioned at the start, Trevor, when you read the plot summary out, pretty much the cats are, in the stage show, they're in a junkyard and they're all competing to be the cat that pretty much dies and goes to what they assume is the Heaviside Lair, which is heaven. But they fleshed it out and made it more like an Australian Idol or American Idol type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
As old Deuteronomy just announces, okay, our next act. And unfortunately, the way it's done like that, it then almost shows the shortcomings of the musical, which is a song after a song. At least in the stage show, in between songs, there'd be break-ins or something from McCavity, and there'd be some little dance interlude or something like that, but it's completely lost. And it's really a lot, I think, with Tom Hooper just not understanding the medium of a movie musical. You know, you've got, like I mentioned earlier, the Jellicle Ball, you know, the big scene where they finally go into the Egyptian theater. Again, they look so much bigger than they should be on that stage, but it's like they enter the cat theater or something. Mm. But in the stage show, the Jellicle Ball is this big 15-minute epic dance sequence, which is really quite beautiful and so well done. But Tom Hooper then cuts it down to a 2-minute scene and then doesn't show half the dancers' feet. And especially a musical that is so dance orientated, and you've pretty much cut out the dancing and focused on the stuff that people don't really like about the show.
Yeah, I was fully aware Cats is basically a bunch of cats singing to introduce themselves, and then one of them dies because that's what they want, because they get to go to a better place.
I don't really know what that is, but
but the one thing that the Jellicle Ball scene did tell me, especially with some of the dancing that was going on there, is that Jellicle Cat probably means horny cat. There was a bit of grinding going on there. And Victoria,
the music changes at one stage, and they all get on all fours, and their tails just start flicking. And I'm like, I don't think I should be watching this.
this is rated for kids. I tell you what, I think the only two I actually thought that had any chemistry, and it was only just so minor and so little, I think, just compared to everybody else just basically being there, was Victoria and Mr. Mistopheles. They actually seem to have like a little bit of chemistry going on, of her thinking, okay, I don't know if they were meant to be like paired up in the musical itself, but I thought they're kind of doing a half-assed Yeah, it's kind of like a half-assed romantic interest going on here, which doesn't much all over, but yeah.
I can kind of see from the script writers, if they had a script writers, but yeah, whoever put this together wanted to give it that sort of thing, because a lot of the movie is all about how Mr. Mistopheles is, you know, trying to get the confidence. He doesn't think he's confident enough to be a magic cat, and as we see at the end, spoiler alert, he ends up being the one that sort of helps bring some of the cats back to after they got rid of by McCavity. Again, why this cat has magical powers that can involve spinning, making cats spin and disappear through the roof and all sorts of things, we never know. But I kind of like in the stage show, McCavity's just kind of seen as this cat that appears every now and then with lightning bolts. And we only see glimmers of him, whereas in this we've got, what's his name, Idris Elba. Doesn't even look like a cat because he's got a hat on. And then I love how there's one
hat and a trench coat.
That line in McCavity that Taylor Swift sings, you know, McCavity's a ginger cat and he's brown. I think they should have checked that out before they.
It should have been McCavity's a buff-ass cat. He was bloody packed.
And then he takes his coat off. he takes this trench coat thing off and the hat, and it just looks really strange. It's like he's wearing this furry bodysuit. Yeah, it's kind of weird. But yeah, so they've given that sort of extra thing to Mr. Mistopheles to give it sort of a bit more of an interest, and Victoria sort of encouraging him to use his magic. But the funny thing is, if you listen to the lyrics, like a lot of times Tom Hooper hasn't realized this, but Mr. Mistopheles is known as the magical, wonderful Mr. Mistopheles. So why are we making it out that he can't do it? Same with Buster for Jones. Yep. The whole song's about him going, I'm fat. And then there's a scene where James Corden goes, I told you not to talk about my weight. And you're like, oh, they obviously haven't, yeah. Listen to the lyrics.
They thought lyrics. So, let's let James Corden be funny, and he's not that funny at the best of times.
Yeah, exactly. Don't let them ad lib. And it's funny because James Corden and Rebel Wilson apparently gone on the house on fire, and I'm like, yeah, but your section of the movie probably shouldn't be there.
yeah. Cool. Certainly covering a little ground here.
Sorry, we've kind of gone all over the place, but it's one of those movies that is kind of all over the place.
Yeah. But we have all these songs singing about who these cats are. I think one thing that really, the first thing that made me, quite a few things made me go, but there was a whole bit where Grisabella turns up, and there's this whole long song about Grisabella, you know, being this cat who used to be great but left and stuff like that. And then you get to the end of the song, and Victoria goes, so who's that? I just went, well, they just sang a fucking song about it. How can you ask that?
And it's so funny because, and it's like, as I said, all that dialogue has been added. There's no dialogue in the stage show. So all of that's been added, and you just go, you don't underestimate the audience so much, you know, and especially when it was a slow song where the words could be picked up. Okay. Like, I have watched the movie with people before that said, can we put the subtitles on? But like, examples in songs like that, it's pretty much a given, and I think they shouldn't underestimate the audience so much. And I felt that, and I remember thinking this when I first saw it, is adding the dialogue, if you're familiar with the musical, was so cheesy. It just felt so out of place, and I think it should have just let it speak for itself. And hey, the movie would have been a little bit shorter. Sort of, a lot of people would like that.
True. But tell you what, with Grisabella, because obviously, you know, she's meant to be a sympathetic character. We're meant to sympathize with her. And they build up, and she invites her in. And obviously, you know, she sings Memories, and we're all supposed to be bawling. But it's like with Jennifer Hudson, she started at that level of tears going down her face and what appeared to be snot coming out of her nose. That's how sad she was. So she couldn't get any sadder. So by the time she got to the big just the same as I saw you when you first started, and
exactly
not sympathizing with you at all.
I just saw her playing Aretha Franklin in Respect, and you're like, oh wow, is this the same person? Because you've hit the nail on the head, Trevor. I never really could really work out why Memory didn't work, and it is because she started so big already. And Tom Hooper's big thing that he does with musicals, he did this with Les Mis, has all the actors singing live on set. Now, as we know, with most all musicals, usually they pre-record and just mime to that. So whatever you hear, it's interesting because I've heard the soundtrack on Spotify, and even the soundtrack has people walking away in the background because they had no recording of the songs beforehand. So I think that kind of it threw Jennifer Hudson off, because she's a fantastic singer, and I just felt that she could have really nailed that. But she was also probably too snotty and too covered with whatever fur or whatever fake dots she was covered in, that it just didn't feel real. So I felt that. And Grisabella's a weird part. Like, I know whenever that tours, that's the big role. It came out here a couple of years ago, and for people not from Australia, one of our local, I suppose our current generations, Olivia Newton-John, Delta Goodrum played Grisabella, and you think, God, so they come out for one song and then sit out the back for an hour and a half and then come back out and their last song. And I considered the start. That's why I think Robbie Fairchild, who plays Munkustrap, the sort of the narrator cat, I always think of him as the lead character, because it's quite a thing. It's obviously meant to be this big diva moment. Now, Judi Dench was supposed to play Grisabella in the original production of Cats, and broke her Achilles tendon like 2 weeks before. Yeah. So that might explain, people go, oh, that's Judy doesn't quite fit in this movie. That's why she plays old Deuteronomy. He's normally played by a man. Now, and I don't want to be sexist here, but I think it needs to be a man playing it because there's that song Moments of Happiness, which she talks her way through. There's normally sung by this big baritone voice, and I just felt that, yeah, it lost a bit. Mm. But I love that Tom Hooper gave her a chance to be in it finally, but whether she is happy with that.
I mean, at least that explains why Dame Judi Dench, acclaimed actress, is in this movie. I guess that's a bit of a thing there. I could not for the life of me work out why Ian McKellen was in this movie, and I never knew that I never wanted to see him lapping water from a bowl like a cat. I never knew that was something I would never, ever, ever want to see until after I bloody saw it. And it got me thinking, why is Ian McKellen in this movie? And my theory here is he's got the well-known rivalry with Patrick Stewart. And I feel he was trying to outdo Patrick Stewart playing the poo emoji in the Emoji Movie. He was saying, I'm going to raise you by playing a cat
and amazing.
Debasing myself to lap out of a water bowl in the backstage of a dingy theater. Top that, Patrick.
I love that.
That's all I can think of.
Because he's good friends with Judi Dench. I thought she's probably like, Ian, if I have to do this, you have to as well. But you got to admit,
that works too.
He definitely embraces it. Like from the moment we first see him, he's growling and doing all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But look, I love Ian McKellen, but the Gus the Theatre Cat song is normally very plotting and not very exciting. He made it worse. Sorry, Ian. You know, the whole talk singing. Yep. Well, I suppose you can't even call it singing, but talking through these songs. Normally in the stage show, that whole Gus song becomes sort of, he starts to have a flashback and they reenact a 15-minute pantomime on stage. So, yeah, that's probably good they cut that out. That's where Growl Tiger, you know, the guy that they, on the boat, they get sent into in the Thames with, anyway, it's all been changed for the movie, but I was kind of like, Ian, can you please just stop? Can we just get to Skimbleshanks the Railway Cat? Because as you would have noticed, Trevor, we had this introducing, and then all these slow songs and all this sad stuff. And then we better start introducing some more cats because we're near the end.
Yeah.
And that's very much the feel of the movie. I always feel that it has that sort of boring lull in the middle.
Fair enough. And then suddenly we have Taylor Swift getting to do a theme song for another cat. Mind you, all the songs in this thing are bloody theme songs for cats anyway. She didn't even get her own character.
The song that's not about her.
Which is just like, you missed out. Even Grisabella got to sing some of the song about her.
in the stage show, Bombalurina, which is the part played by Taylor Swift, is actually one of the, I suppose, narrators as well. Like when in the Gumby Cat song, she's the one who's saying, you know, she knits and da-da-da-da-da, you know, and rather than Rebel Wilson singing. So because they got Taylor, they're like, well, we can't afford to pay her for more than more than that one song. She doesn't do too badly because, again, Trevor, now that I've told you it was all done live on set, you kind of have a different appreciation / understanding of how they were recording these songs. She didn't do too badly, but she didn't have much to work with. And again, she came down on a crescent moon with high heels on.
Why not?
Oh, McCavity makes can make much... things happen. He can make high heels happen.
Yeah, it makes as much sense as anything else in this movie.
Exactly.
Absolutely. But mind you, because, I mean, they're all singing to each other and performing. And then that's why I think, like, after Grisabella gets chosen and gets sent off to the Heaviside Layer to be reborn, and they cut to that bit where they're sitting on the lion on the base of Nelson's Common. Again, completely changed scales. I think they changed scales of the size of the cats several times while on top of that lion itself. And she just starts singing directly to camera. I'm like, who the... It was like that bit in Rocky where Dr. Scott turns to camera and everyone in the audience just goes, who the fuck are you talking to? It was exactly what I was thinking when that happened. And she starts narrating it like what we just watched was a documentary and then gives us the revelation that a cat is not a dog.
Oh, I know. The addressing of cats, which is the song, has never been a huge song in the show. Again, old Deuteronomy, imagine a real bass.
Duh, 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 duh.
on the stage when Ultratron is up the back and all the cats are doing their interpretive dancing, that works as a final number of the show. But I read a review which sums it up quite well. Victoria has been our protagonist, our eyes the whole way through. Why are we suddenly being spoken to directly? Why wouldn't all the cats previously have just been singing to us? Probably a number that should have been cut out, but a lot of things should have been cut out. A lot of things were, but probably not enough. There's a lot of racist, there's a couple of racist songs in Cats with very bad.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
A couple of them have slipped through. Like they talk about peaks and stuff like and pollicles and stuff like that. It's a reference to Pekingese people, and I noticed that they make reference to that in Taylor Swift's song. And I was like, ooh, that slipped through. All the other ones cut. So,
all right,
it's not 1982 anymore.
We've seen some stuff from 1982. It's like.
I was saying to you, hindsight's a wonderful thing because I saw this in cinema a couple of times, got the DVD. As I said, if I know a musical and can feel like I can put it on and sort of sing along or, you know, have that sort of familiarity, I don't mind it too much. In hindsight, though, I watched it again the last day or so, having not seen it since pre-COVID.
All right.
And I'm now like, wow, why was I so, yeah. This is really boring / not good.
Okay, so, well, before we get too much onto our opinions, yep. Okay, cool, cool. So what was there anything else from the movie that you wanted to touch on, I think, before we move on to our opinions and conclusions?
Pretty much all I've got here is opinion-based stuff. I think we've covered things pretty well.
Good. So in that case, I mean, as I admitted culpability for at the start of this podcast, I did in fact choose to watch Cats for this. So Christian, please give us your thoughts and let us know what you think of the redeemability of this movie.
Okay, I've given a lot of my thoughts about this. I come in differently being a fan. You don't usually admit you're a fan of the musical, but yeah, I know the musical quite well. So I'm coming in there from that angle too. Look, I think at the end of the day, this is one of those things that has me scratching my head going, it shouldn't have been made. It's just because you've got a musical that's been successful and might have worked as a stage show, doesn't need to be adapted. The next musical Andrew Lloyd Webber did after Cats was Starlight Express, which everyone on roller skates. You know, you'd adapt that into a musical and to a movie because it was bizarre. And I think that's kind of what we're coming in here. And I think Tom Hooper didn't realise that a lot of the appeal in Cats lies in its blockbuster, extravagant sets, not its necessarily at its core, its narrative or its score. It's very faithful to the score overall, but I felt the stunt casting, with, you know, casting actors that aren't necessarily singers, went against it. I would have rather seen an entire movie done with the people from the Royal Ballet. You know, those lead actors, those dancers that we see playing all the roles, and they managed to sing a lot better, even those people as well. So I just think it lacked the proper narrative to really be turned into a movie at all. As I said, rewatching, not as interesting as I remembered it being, but you can't deny a lot of work went into this film. You can tell the money that went into it, but probably money not spent well. Put $100 million into another product, possibly. Universal has Wicked coming out as a stage show next year. So, you know, let's hope they can redeem themselves with that. Look, I don't think this needed to be made. I think if anyone wants to watch Cats that can't see it as a stage show, watch the 1998 film stage version. It's on YouTube. Amazing. That's how the show's supposed to be seen. And I think that's probably the way it should have ended. So, Trevor, I'm going to say because this movie shouldn't have been made because it's too strange, it's irredeemable. Unfortunately.
Okay, not redeemable from Christian. Now, I wonder where I'm going to go with this.
Yeah.
I just want to make a point of something I realized halfway through. So they were all performing to see who would be reborn or say renew. So in a weird way, this is like a Cat's version of Logan's Run.
Interesting. Way of looking at it.
Yep. Look, I think the fact that my cats, who normally will settle in on the chairs when I'm watching something, were nowhere to be seen throughout the entire length of this movie says quite a bit. I could go on about the horrible CGI, the lack of plot, how most of the songs went on for just way too long or were performed stupidly by people who weren't, I suppose, up for these songs. And of course, wondering how top tier talent got roped into this, but I'll settle for just saying that this movie is completely not redeemable.
I had the feeling that would happen, Trevor, but we had to hear it from you.
So there we go. We can officially declare Cats not redeemed.
Yes, I'm sure that a lot of people weren't too surprised about that result, given the given the response of earlier and the response of the general world. I think I know they did a few screenings, Trevor, like trying to Rocky Horror esque ones, and I didn't really want to go because I'm like, I don't know, I'd probably sing along the whole time. I don't find this that weird, but yeah, I think, as I said, in hindsight, 2 years later, I don't know if I'd be as keen. let it exist in a pre-COVID world.
But I think with that, because Rocky Horror took a while to catch on as the interactive screening. I understand with Cats, it was happening within weeks of release.
Oh, yeah. But a lot of times, too, with Rocky Horror, it's because people want to rewatch the movie again. I think a lot of people I knew had gone to, they did a couple of screenings in Brisbane, like late night screenings around the time, and people said it wasn't fun. It was just, what is this? You want to have an enjoyable experience with a movie. So I don't think this is going to have the life expectancy that Rocky Horror or even movies with 1 year lifetime is gonna be.
You can't force a movie into becoming a cult classic. It kind of has got to grow into it, and doesn't tend to have those legs.
No.
Okay,
it's
so
not fun enough.
Absolutely. Now, this podcast is called Redeeming Features. So while we didn't redeem the movie, we do like to end on a high note. Normally, disclaimer time. Ooh. I tried so hard to find a sincere 5-star review. I searched high and low, and I just had to settle with this. So, title, scary. The most well-thought-out horror movie ever. You'll never look at your cat the same way again. 5 stars.
So maybe from a horror movie point of view, it is redeemable.
I just, like I said, there was just not a single sincere 5-star review. So I think that says quite a lot.
Yeah. It should have just not been filmed at all. I think just leave it alone. Well, it's been made, now leave it alone.
We've had that experiment, and in 10, 15 years' time, there's going to be somebody else that has a crack at this, but it's going to. We just pretend it's not happening until then. Cool. So, that's Cats done. So an important thing we need to work out is, what's our next movie going to be, Christian?
Ooh, now I go through a bit of a list each time. Now, I couldn't find my recent list, but I went off memory of a couple of things that I'd thought of. Now, this is a movie that I would never have normally suggested, but it's been on my radar for a while as one of those movies that apparently, so many people walked out of this movie apparently when it came out. It's only a recent movie. I've got here 2018. I think I should be right. I don't think it's 2019. And no, it's not Cats. this has been something I've been wanting to see for a while, just to see if it really is as bad as people say it is. The most unfunny movie in years, apparently. We're going to look at the Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly movie, Holmes and Watson from 2018.
Oh, this has been on my curiosity list for a while as well. So
watch it just to see if it's as bad. And I thought, no, I'm going to suggest this. People were walking out in droves within the first 10 or 15 minutes. It was that bad. So, Trevor, I'm interested to see, because I'm a John C. Reilly fan. Will Ferrell, when they team up.
He can be good or bad,
So I'm interested to see, because this is also the same year that I saw John C. Reilly in Stan and Ollie, the Laurel and Hardy movie, and he was should have been nominated for an Oscar. So when you see him being in this a couple of months beforehand, the things you do with your friend, I suppose. But yeah, so yep. Trevor, I think it's time we watch this and see if it's really as bad as everyone said it was.
Fair enough. Holmes and Watson, it was released in 2018. I did the quick thing of looks up internet on a podcast. And for people that want to check this out, it's available on Netflix in Australia or for renting on all the other usual places. So it should be pretty easy to find. If anybody else wants to check out Holmes and Watson before our next chat, we will, of course, put out feelers on the Facebook page for comments in the lead up to our next recording, which I hope will be a lot sooner. And this one was trying to get back into it, but you know, with all the things,
the last year or so has been interesting, so thanks for bearing with us.
absolutely. So this might be out in time for the Patreons. If you wanted to plug Wuthering Heights Day, which I know is this coming Saturday. Was there anything else you wanted to plug, Christian?
Oh, look, after having no events for a few months, we've got a lot of things coming back, like the Kate Bush. Ooh. I mean, sorry, as you said, the Wuthering Heights Day. Sorry, the Madonna Party is what I meant to say, which is happening on the 18th of September. As always, in November, we've got David Bowie. Bowie's Down Brunswick, which is a fundraising dress-up event, which hoping we can dance this year. We haven't been able to the last couple of years, and you can't have a Bowie night without dancing. Probably the best thing to do is head to christianfletcher.com. That's Christian with a K, christianfletcher.com, and I'm updating all the events there at the moment. So a lot of things that haven't happened in the last year and a half are now finally happening, and fingers crossed we can stay that way.
Yep, absolutely. So from a Rufus Project Presents side of things, we've just gotten a fresh What the History out that I do with my wife Susie, so please check that out. It includes a bit of Australian history as well. Yes, quite a funny one, I feel. And of course, hoping to get some more content out with regards to the Project Flashback, getting those old redeeming feature ones back online, along with getting some more stuff up on the Patreon. I still do want to do another Join Our Cult, probably on Flash Gordon. Hopefully we can get that organized as a Patreon only exclusive. And if you do join our Patreon at patreon.com/RufusProject, you get all these added benefits. There's a whole bunch of extra content on there. You get the podcasts early, and you can actually watch us record these things live if that's your idea of a good time.
How could you say no? Look at us. Am I pointing the right way? Look at us.
You put it the right way.
Oh, no.
There you go.
You get the idea.
If you want to see what happened, you've got to join the Patreon and catch the replay of this. Yeah. What a selling point. But anything Rufus Project related, there's a homepage, rufusproject.com. Obviously, you can follow us on Facebook at Rufus Project there as well. Cool. I think that's about it. So, Christian, thank you for...
Thanks for suggesting it, Trevor. Cats. I didn't have to.
That's true. I've missed this so much. I've had such a ball tonight. So I've actually gotten something good out of this horrible movie.
Yeah. There's more horrible movies to come.
Yay! Cool. So until next time, when we return with Holmes and Watson, thank you for listening, and we will be back very, very soon. Farewell.
Fantastic. See you, everyone. Thanks, Trevor.
Hell!
Fire!
Call the
fire!
Your Majesty, may I present to you
the greatest detective of all time, Sherlock Holmes, and Dr. John Watson.
I love you.
Watson!
Oh!
What a looker, right?
She is stunning.
Sherlock Holmes. His methods are ingenious.
Right there.
He's a master of disguise.
What have you done with Sherlock?
Why, Watson?
I never left.
And his mind is brilliant.
Angle of approach. Compensate for warp and flaw. Termination of mosquito.
Well done, Holmes.
Oh, my God! Watson, stop panicking!
A murder in Buckingham Palace.
Solve this case in 4 days or I will kill the Queen. Signed, Professor James Moriarty.
Come, Watson. We have a killer to catch.
Yeah, no shit, Sherlock.
Shall we begin the autopsy?
Dr. Grace Hart.
A woman doctor?
Impossible.
Fortunately, we have a real doctor.
Yeah? Would you like some heroin?
I have 2 days left to live. Solve this case.
Her Majesty. Would you mind if we had a picture together?
Watson!
Who's going to take the photograph?
I will take it. You see, it's sort of a self-photograph.
He's a real fan.
I swear, I never do this.
Hey, girl!
Hey, girl!
Over by the window, the lighting's much better.
Yes, yes.
Oh, my God!
Mother of shit!
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this? Do you think we should? Got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm the B, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Cause we've got cats, and we've got Netflix. We've got snacks.